I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Our hour coming up relates to the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Information is coming in as we speak, and we've kept up with as much as we can in this ongoing story. We're going to have two guests with us during the course of the hour. We'll start with the foremost expert on the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Ethan Theo Harris, an American historian, professor of history emeritus at Marquette University, author of so many books on the FBI, from the origins of McCarthyism to the secret files of J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI and American democracy. In the mid-70s, Ethan, because he was exploring the Truman and Eisenhower loyalty and security programs, as well as articles on FBI wiretapping, was asked by the Church Committee to conduct research at presidential libraries. That was, as you'll recall, the Senate Select Committee to study governmental operations with respect to intelligence activities that was formed after the Nixon administration. FBI and CIA abuses became public. He has examined presidential records relating to the FBI and White House at the Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson presidential libraries, and examined FBI records at the FBI headquarters. In 1976, he became a specialist in the history of the FBI. Joining us just a little bit later will be Ruth Conniff. Ruth has joined us many times before. She is editor-in-chief of the Progressive magazine. I would imagine our phone lines will be crowded. Join us as soon as you would like. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, we love to read your messages there always, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Ethan Theo Harris, thank you very much for joining us.
Good to be on your show.
Very nice to have you here. Could it be considered, Ethan, obstruction of justice for a president to fire the head of the agency that is investigating his campaign's possible coordination with Russia to disrupt our election?
Not necessarily, unless we knew that was the case. It surely was questionable that the timing of the firing of FBI Director Comey, and particularly the rationale offered relating to his public comments in July and October 2016.
James Comey, you have studied so many other, particularly J. Edgar Hoover, heads of the FBI. Was James Comey competent? He's made a lot of people upset with some of the things that he has said and done. Is he a competent, or was he a competent FBI head?
Well, there's no evidence. That's why it's surprising that the decision was made in 2017 that about his leadership of the Bureau had to do with his judgment in making those public comments in July and October 2016, in the midst of a presidential campaign in which a central issue was former Secretary of State Clinton's emails. There's no evidence that the investigation that the FBI conducted into the Clinton email matter was done incompetently, nor any other of the FBI's criminal and counterintelligence investigations, including the current one about the so-called Russian connection.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I find it surprising that this decision would be made, and that the rationale that was offered related to the public, the unprecedented actions, public actions that Comey took in July when offering that gratuitous comment after announcing that the FBI did not recommend her indictment, that she had acted recklessly. The Bureau's role is simply to decide whether, when it initiates an investigation based upon a probable cause to violate federal statute standard, whether there's sufficient evidence to justify prosecution, and the decision to prosecute would be made by Justice Department officials.
Mm-hmm.
So to add this comment surely was inappropriate, and it really had political impact because it affected, raised a question about her judgment. And then in the closing week of the campaign to announce that they're reopening the investigation, when the Bureau does not announce it normally, raise serious questions about the FBI director's actions.
So does it ring true when President Trump cites that handling of Hillary Clinton's emails as being the reason that he has lost confidence in the FBI director, or is that sort of hard to believe?
That's hard to take, particularly given his stances during the campaign itself when he was at the end of October, praised Comey for his courage in reopening the investigation, and when throughout the campaign he questioned whether the FBI was action and not recommend prosecution was appropriate. So it seems sort of hard to see the rationale being advanced now that would be sufficient reason to dismiss the FBI director. Absent any other evidence, which would have come up since then, about Comey's administration of the Bureau, given its myriad other responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. We've been hearing just in the last couple of days that there has been an escalation of activity in the FBI investigation of the Trump campaign, possible Russian connection. Do we know anything about that? Do you know how far along they are, how widespread this investigation is?
We don't know. I mean, this is the way the Bureau conducts investigations, which is why Comey's statements in July and September were unprecedented. It doesn't publicize the fact that it's conducting an investigation, nor does it remark about the progress of that investigation. Well, this case was somewhat unusual because it was such a central issue in the presidential campaign, but we don't know the status of the Russian connection investigation. I know there was a press story today that Comey had asked for additional resources, and that raises a whole different question about the dismissal itself, and that question is the degree to which you have this attempt to influence the decisions of the FBI on the part of the White House.
And was the FBI investigation, even though we don't know the details, the best investigation in town?
Well, I think it has the resources to be able to be the best investigation in town, have access to the records of other intelligence agencies in the course of that investigation, both CIA and NSA, because of the sensitivity of how information is acquired by the intelligence agencies and the need to avoid compromising sources. So the FBI really would be the premium institution in terms of conducting a thorough and effective investigation into such a important and sensitive matter,
mm-hmm.
particularly because it involves the current president, even though it involves past actions. So
McCabe was trying to assure the Senate Intelligence Committee today, I believe that was that committee or some other committee, that the investigation would go on, that they don't worry about obstruction from the White House, even though you could wonder about, wasn't it obstruction to fire the director of the FBI? How important is it, Ethan, who is the head of the FBI, who Donald Trump might nominate, who would have to be confirmed, how that would happen, and would it change or even squelch the nomination to have somebody who was a loyalist, administration loyalist, to be at the head of the FBI?
Well, if it's administration loyalist, right away you have the perception problem. And clearly the FBI director has considerable influence over the decisions that the Bureau makes itself with respect to recommending prosecution or not. So that the director is important in that sense. The quality of the investigation is dependent upon the quality of the agents and how thorough they explore leads and that they acquire in the course of their investigation.
And do you have faith in the FBI that they will do just that? Does history show us that the FBI can do one heck of a good investigation?
Well, it can and it can't. Its record is spotty. It wasn't true that the FBI always got its man. That was the mantra of the time. And we knew about FBI successes and not its failures. So in the past, in the case of this investigation, I think that the evidence inevitably would be somewhat murky. You're not going to have a smoking gun as you did in the case of the Watergate investigation where you had Nixon on tape. Normally you would only have paper records at that time, and so that they have this sort of confirmation of a taping system in the Oval Office that records the president's specific decisions was unusual. I think that the investigation would be a difficult one in any case.
And finally, Frank Rich in today's New York, I think it was published today, magazine, says this, and I want your response to it. The axing of James Comey will not be the end of the Russia investigation, but it might be the beginning of the end of the Trump administration. He calls for an independent prosecutor. Do you think there will be one? And is this an indication that the Trump administration is in serious trouble?
I don't know that it is. I mean, because there is no evidence necessarily at this point in time that you'll have a special prosecutor. And it's hard to assess what information would be developed. Clearly, the intent apart from what the president said about the effectiveness of the Comey in leading the FBI, reflects a concern on the part of the president, given his other public statements that this is a fake investigation, it should be over, wasting taxpayers' money. These statements itself indicate that Trump is interested in stopping the FBI investigation or any further investigation into the, quote, Russian connection. I think we will know down the road, but it really raises a very serious question about the FBI-White House relationship and the extent to which the White House can exert pressure on the Bureau through senior officials and affecting its conduct.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the FBI did operate, which was one of the things found out by the Church Committee in 1975, in many respects as the intelligence arm of the White House, and that's something that we should be concerned about, the degree to which the White House can exercise pressure in influencing investigations.
Who do you think would make a fine new director of the FBI, Ethan?
I have no names come to mind, unfortunately.
You haven't heard any circulated that you think would be A-OK?
No, I haven't, because I haven't really sort of lost my contacts with official Washington. So I would really be unable to answer your question intelligently.
All right. Ethan, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to talk to you, Kathy.
Yeah, you as well. Ethan Theo Harris, really the foremost expert on the Federal Bureau of Investigation, has written way over 20 books on J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI and McCarthyism and et cetera. We're going to be welcoming phone calls. We're changing guests now, and I would imagine we'll have a lot of you calling in to give your thoughts about what the aftermath has been of the firing of James Comey. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Ruth Conniff joining us now. Ruth is editor of the Progressive magazine and has joined us many times. Ruth, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Kathleen.
Oh, this story. It's just, you know, I was trying to take it all in this morning and last night, and it just, my head is full. My head is full.
It's shocking.
What's shocking about it?
Well, I mean, it is abrupt. It was a surprise to everyone, including James Comey himself, who apparently was in the middle of giving a speech to FBI staff when he saw the news reports on television screens and thought it was a joke and made a joke about how they were teasing him with the news. No one knew that this was going to happen. And it's such a flagrant act. And then the rationale for it, being that the Trump administration didn't like Comey's handling of Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server back before the election, which arguably helped him to win, is so transparently false. You know, there was a ramp up of the investigation of Trump's Russia connections going on right now. James Comey was leading that investigation, and suddenly he's out. So I think it is, you know, we are in the grip of a constitutional crisis, and it is very much like 1973 and Richard Nixon's Saturday Night Massacre when he fired Archibald Cox, who was investigating him for Watergate. We've got the President of the United States firing the person who is leading the investigation of wrongdoing by his closest associates.
He said some really peculiar things, the president. The Washington Post is reporting today, and these are accounts from more than 30 officials, White House officials, Justice Department, Capitol Hill, that Trump was really angry that Comey would not support his claim that Obama had his offices wiretapped.
Yeah.
He was also concerned about you know, too much attention to the Russia probe, not enough about investigating leaks. He's talked about this. So he did that in that interview with John Dickerson as well about this surveillance. It's on his mind, and yet everybody has said there was no surveillance.
You know, and here's where, I mean, I think there's both a parallel and a difference to Watergate. The parallel is that we have this paranoia in the President of the United States and the sense that people are his enemies and the hatred of the press. You know, Nixon made his enemies list, which the late editor of the Progressive magazine, Irwin Knoll, was proud to be on and posted that on his wall. You know, so we've got the attack on the press. We've got the personal paranoia, the sense that the president should be above the law. But what's different now, I think, is that the country has quickly grown accustomed to Trump's lies. You know, it's not credible to say that that Obama wiretapped Trump Tower. And Comey, who would have known that, you know, and it was part of his job to know that. And, right. and it was really an attack on the FBI's professionalism, in addition to this ridiculous statement, felt moved, you know, to refute it. And it enraged Trump. But just the idea of fake news, Trump's constant use of the term fake news to describe outfits like the New York Times and the Washington Post, and these ridiculous statements, I feel that it has inured people to really unprofessional, unbecoming behavior by the President of the United States, and that puts us in a even more unstable environment than we were during the Watergate era, where ultimately Republicans and Democrats in a bipartisan sense of agreement came together to say, no, we cannot put up with this. This is, this is a president who is not fulfilling the duties of his office and is besmirching the office and the country.
Well, what do you think about the Republican response here, Ruth? There have been a few Republicans, probably just a handful, who are really troubled by what's going on here. The most of them, well, the president has a right to fire the FBI director. You know, he wasn't happy with his performance. It's within his purview. I don't see anything wrong with this. Do you think that more Republicans will break ranks?
I do, and I think the ones who don't break ranks now are going to regret it. I think, you know, look at Paul Ryan, who has been through this agonizing sets of tortured reversals, or Ted Cruz, who was personally affronted by Trump during the campaign and, you know, who I watched lead this insurgent rejection campaign at the Republican convention, now having to stand behind Trump, make some noises. I mean, this is what seems to be the pattern with the Republicans, make some noises of objection. You know, they don't like what the president's doing. They don't like the way he's doing it. They don't like his style, but, you know, they're going to support it anyway. And I think I think there's an erosion, and actually you've seen it really pick up pace this week. There's an erosion of the ability of these officials who care about their own long-term political careers to continue to stand behind Trump.
The other thing that was incredible yesterday, and I have not heard a good explanation as to why in the world the White House thought it was a good idea to have the Russian foreign minister and the ambassador in the White House have Russian cameras giving us the story, American press not involved there. What were they thinking? What were they thinking?
I mean, this to me is one of the most alarming things about Donald Trump and the Trump administration, is that the strategy, and it appears to be a successful strategy, is to lean into outrageous acts, to never apologize, to never backpedal. And so not only does he fire Comey, who's in the middle of examining connections to Russia and Russia's influence in the campaign and whether the Trump campaign members and supporters knew about it and abetted it, not only does he fire him in the middle of that investigation, he then provides this transparently baloney excuse that he's firing him for something that he had praised him for previously that happened before the election, and mentions that, you know, in his letter firing Comey, that he's so glad that Comey cleared him three times, said three times he was not a target of the investigation, which seems like protesting too much. So all of that is leaning in. And then on top of it, meets with the very people.
It was weird.
The very people whose contacts with Jeff Sessions and with members of the Trump campaign and administration officials is a subject of the FBI investigation, and further bars the White House press corps from attending that meeting. And instead, we all get to see the official photography by the Russian press, which was there. It's leaning in, you know, and it's a strategy. And I think it's a strategy we've seen over time with the right-wing news media, with Fox News, with the right-wing talkers. It's, you know, doubling down, saying something outrageous, not being willing to go back from it. And I think it riles up Trump's supporters, and it helps him with his small base in the United States that's so angry and so turned off and disgusted by the institutions of democracy, by Democratic officials, by the New York Times and the Washington Post, and sort of what they see as the establishment that doesn't care about them. I think that's who he sees as his supporters, and I think that he has built something on that. But it's corrosive. It's enormously corrosive of democracy and any shared sense of responsible government and the public interest.
Well, and the basis of all of this is people, most people you would think in America would want to get to the bottom of this hostile foreign power, Russia, disrupting our elections, and they're disrupting other elections as well. That's a basis of all of this. Why isn't everybody on board?
Well, I think people are on board. I think that people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham are on board. I think there is increasingly a sense that something is very, very wrong here. And, you know, that Russia clearly has been pursuing a pattern of trying to disrupt elections. In fact, that was part of the testimony that we heard yesterday before the Senate Intelligence Committee, that the acting director of the FBI says, yes, this is a very important investigation. It is not, as the White House tried to portray it, a small matter, that there is absolutely a building effort by Russia to continue to try to disrupt U.S. elections, and that it has to come from the very highest levels in Russia. So that is real. That is really happening. And I think it is a matter of great concern to people who take seriously the defense of our democracy.
Mm-hmm. And now you have subpoenas being issued. So Michael Flynn, maybe he will refuse to turn over his records, but those records have been subpoenaed.
Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting question is what happens now, because that we learned from CNN was the latest act by Comey right before his firing, is that they had begun, the grand jury in Virginia had begun to issue these subpoenas that were bringing in more information. And so who is going to be appointed to lead the FBI and what's going to happen going forward? And I think Trump has an opportunity to appoint somebody credible. Your last guest wasn't sure who that could be. I think Lindsey Graham is a possibility, somebody who's clearly not in the Trump camp. But I think it's unlikely, given the pattern that we've seen, that that's going to be what happens. So then the other thing is the New York Times today, in its lead editorial, writes an open letter to the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, to say, you've got to appoint an independent special prosecutor. You know, save your reputation, save the country. We've got to have an independent investigation.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to welcome phone calls. Ruth Conniff is our guest, and we're talking about the firing of James Comey and all that had happened before then and what's happening now. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our lines are filled, but you can get through eventually. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. Let's go to Betsy in River Falls first. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, Kathleen and Ruth Conniff. It is so good to hear your words. Those are some of the best words I've heard on this subject, and I've listened all day. I have two questions. One, I wondered if the triggering point was Sally Yates' conversation saying that that the Trump administration was being investigated, kind of like other people are paying attention, that he can't shut up everybody. And my second question is, how scary is it to have Jeff Sessions as head of the Justice Department?
Well, so I don't know what the actual trigger was, and I don't think anybody knows, because apparently one of the triggers was that Donald Trump was watching the Sunday shows and got outraged by the discussion of the Russia investigation. Clearly, they had queued up this excuse that dates back to before the election for firing Comey. And according to the White House, Trump had been thinking about it for a long time. The two men had a lot of contempt for each other. So I think, we don't know what the single trigger was, but the timing is just irrefutably that this investigation was heating up and that Comey was leading the investigation. Jeff Sessions, my friend John Nichols of The Nation, says he should be impeached. He lays out a case in The Nation. I just talked to him about it this morning. I think it's an excellent case. He lied to Congress about forgetting his multiple contacts with the Russian ambassador, and then recused himself from any involvement in the Russia investigation on that basis, and therefore was confirmed, having settled those fears to the satisfaction of the Senate committee that confirmed him, and now fires a guy who is leading the investigation. So there is an open and shut case for impeaching Jeff Sessions.
Mm. And let's talk about this comment, which we're hearing repeatedly now from the president. Evidently, he said it to Lester Holt a couple times during today's interview. We have not seen yet, but we are hearing about it, that he was told by Comey three times that he was not under investigation. They had dinner. He asked him. I asked him three times, not under investigation. He said it again to Lester Holt. Why is he on this? I was never under investigation. Well, he might be, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the denial is almost it's a tick that seems to show that he's obsessed with the fact that he is potentially under investigation himself. And when Andrew McCabe, the acting FBI director, was asked about this by the Senate Intelligence Committee, he said that it would not be standard in any way for somebody to be assured that they were not under investigation. So, I mean, I think that suggests that those conversations never happened.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to John in Madison next. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, Trump seems to be given the precipitous action. I mean, this is on the level of when he shot 60 missiles without U.N. confirmation of Assad's involvement in it, and no involvement of the U.N. Security Council or going to the Congress for under the War Powers Act. He just acts whenever he feels like it. And this is another example, I think, of the same thing. The thing that bothers me about this is it hasn't been explained to me how our Constitution or law reads regarding what are illegal or prosecutable acts by a foreign government by interfering in our democratic process. I also am interested, is there anything in our law that forbids our CIA or FBI involved in disrupting other countries' sacred democratic process?
Well, we don't have a great history in that regard. I mean, absolutely, the CIA has meddled in other democratic governments. And actually, one of my favorite op-eds about Russian meddling in the U.S. election was by Ariel Dorfman, who worked in the Allende government in Chile and said, you know, really? A foreign government meddling in a democratic election? Yeah, I can believe it. So, you know, in a sense, I think people who have seen the United States get involved in covert operations to topple democratically elected leaders in Latin America see this as, you know, ironic that the public here should be upset about it. But that's, you know, that doesn't mean that it's okay. It just means that, you know, the U.S. history is not perfect in this regard. But we do live in a democracy here inside the United States, and it is not it's not our aspiration to live in a banana republic and have other governments come and intervene or have a imperial presidency. And we have mechanisms in our democracy that we need to take hold of and make work to perfect our democracy and to defend the Constitution.
Who's going to get at the truth? Do you feel that the FBI is going to be able to conduct a wide-ranging, thorough investigation? Do you think that the truth will come from leakers, people at the FBI who perhaps were upset that Comey was fired? Do you think it will come from really fine journalism? Where are we going to get the truth?
Well, I think all of those are part of the answer. But I think the problem now is that we're in a holding pattern until we know who the next director of the FBI is. And I think it's unlikely that it's going to be somebody who will pursue the truth in this case. And I think that the Senate Intelligence Committee does not have the tools that the FBI has in terms of law enforcement or investigative powers, so they won't be able to get as much information and do as much, even if we didn't have Mitch McConnell saying that they should shut the whole investigation down, even if there were a genuinely bipartisan committee that were really going to go after the truth. They have less power than the FBI has. So I think that leaves one option, and that's a special prosecutor. And I think that The Times makes this very compelling case in its lead editorial today to Rod Rosenstein to do the right thing, and that we need that in order to have confidence that we will ever get the truth.
Well, indications are that he doesn't like the fact that he's being made the guy who resulted. It was his letter and his thoughts that resulted in the firing of James Comey. He doesn't like being in that position.
No, and his letter was about how Comey really did not have to go public with the information that there was a continuing investigation of the Hillary Clinton email server, which he then later and too late said didn't amount to anything new, but potentially really did influence the outcome of the election. So Rosenstein's letter had entirely to do with that issue,
right?
Something that Trump at the time praised. It did not have to do with the Russia investigation. It did not have to do with whether there was no confidence in Comey inside the agency, something that Trump asserted and that the acting director vehemently denied yesterday. So, you know, let's see. You know, he's being used in a way. He also is the person that Comey went to talk about needing additional resources for this Russia investigation, and was immediately thereafter that he participated in the removal of Comey. So I think he's got a lot of responsibility right now.
Ruth Conniff is our guest this part of the show, and we're talking about the firing of James Comey and the investigations and on and on and on. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network. Okay, let's go to Adam next. Hello, Adam.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I guess I got a question. I've been hearing about this for quite a while, and I can't get an answer. I know back when the elections were going, they were saying, well, the Russians are helping out Hillary, is what the Republicans said. Now they said, well, the Russians helped out the Republicans. The other time was they were helping the Democrats. Well, I mean, how did the Russians actually affect the election is what I want to know.
Well, basically what happened is that the Russian hackers were able to obtain all kinds of emails. And you remember during the Democratic convention, there was this sudden release of emails that showed it was an embarrassing revelation that the party was basically trying to shut down Bernie Sanders, was very critical of him, was trying to tip the scales towards Hillary Clinton as the nominee. And that was disruptive at the Democratic convention. Later, closer to the general election, there were more emails released, just a raft of them from the Hillary Clinton campaign. So they were able to access those emails and release them to the public, and there was a big drumbeat around that in the news. Did the Russians hack into voting machines and change the vote tally? No. There's no evidence of that, and in fact, those voting machines are basically on a local network that you can't hack from Russia. So that's not what happened. But the same thing just happened in France. You know, Russia has gotten involved in this very destabilizing hacking activity, and it is generally done in order to try to support the isolationist nationalist candidates around the globe that they consider to be people that are working in their interests. Mm-hmm. So that's the Russian meddling in the election piece. And the other piece that's really important is whether the Trump family is pursuing business interests in mm-hmm. Russia and elsewhere that benefit them personally and using their public office in order to enrich themselves at the expense of U.S. interests. And that's a very, very important question. It's just a fundamental corruption question, and it is also part of this probe.
That's part of the FBI probe?
It is, in addition, yes.
And the Senate Intelligence probe as well?
The Senate Intelligence Committee so far is talking about the elections. But there's a lot to look at here. I mean, we've had news story after news story. We just saw Jared Kushner's sister in China making promises to accelerate visas, where the Trump family bragging about, you know, the Trump family's business interests in China. I mean, there is definitely the appearance, if not the concrete reality, and, you know, there's really not that much reason to think that couldn't be the case, of the Trump family pursuing business interests in office. I mean, look, they're hawking jewelry from the White House. You know, there's a very serious, the Trump family members who have very high-level positions in the administration dealing with national security have continuing business interests and have distanced themselves in a way that is just not a credible distancing from the business interests that are directly connected to that. You've got, you know, we have a Secretary of State who led Exxon for his entire career until now, who's very enmeshed in pipeline issues in Russia. So those, you know, the murkiness of those business interests and what's happening with U.S. policy and the lack of transparency in this administration, its willingness to shut out the press and to poo-poo concerns about it is as much of a concern as this collusion. You know, I mean, I don't think Russia managed to, like I said, they didn't hack the voting machines. They didn't manage to directly change the vote tally in the election. But they were involved in meddling, and there were a lot of meetings going on about lifting sanctions on Russia should the Trump administration come to power ahead of time. So there's a closeness there, and there's a set of interests there that are not United States interests. They're narrow private interests, and they're Russian interests.
Thanks very much for your call, Adam. 800-486-8655. This has been quoted starting last night, I think, by the Wall Street Journal had this originally, and I'm wondering if it was sort of out of line for James Comey to say this or not. But others have said this as well. Comey evidently told associates that now a lot of outlets are reporting this, that the president was outside the realm of normal, even crazy.
Yeah, I know. There were parallel quotes from Trump and from Comey just expressing disgust and exasperation one with the other. You know, it's not that unusual to have a tense relationship between the FBI director and the President of the United States, or the Attorney General for that matter. I mean, you remember the Janet Reno, Bill Clinton chilliness. You know, there's a threat that's posed by the checks and balances in our democracy to a president who wants more power than he ought to have. And so it's actually a healthy thing, I think, in a democracy to have this independent FBI director, an independent attorney general who's willing to pursue matters that are very uncomfortable to the administration.
Michael is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Hello. This is a speaker. Can you hear me?
Yes, Michael. Go ahead.
Okay. I wish I wasn't as old as I am and I could actually remember all the stuff that I said to the person I talked to first. I could just tape and play that back. It would work. But one of the main things, point I was trying to make is that we're talking about another thing about what Trump did, and the news media has spent a lot of time talking about what Trump has done, and it's not going to end, and it doesn't seem to solve the situation because of the fact that he just creates this news, and he does it, and he controls the conversation. I've come to the point that although I'm terrified by what's happening, that I don't even worry about Trump anymore. He's crazy. He's going to do whatever he damn well pleases. But in order for evil to win, you have to have good men do nothing. And that's the problem we're running into right now. You take a person like Paul Ryan. I don't think Paul Ryan's an evil person. I don't agree with probably anything he says or does. But he's a family man. He's a religious man. He's what you would hope to be a good person. And a lot of good people like him are turning a blind eye to anything Trump does for some possible gain. And I think that's the problem we're running into.
That's a good point. What's the gain, Ruth?
Well, people are trying to advance their political careers within the party that they belong to, and they're stumbling over the fact that they have this rogue president in office who no one thought would win. But I think that a lot can be done. I mean, a couple of things the caller said. One is Trump is controlling the stories, and the media is just sort of following him around. I think it's true that there's an awful lot of talk about Trump and not enough about the resistance movement and things that are going on in the rest of the country. However, I think Trump has lost control of this story. I think this story is the end of that particular cycle where Trump sends out a tweet and everybody covers it, and it's a planned media strategy on his part. I mean, you saw Sean Spicer's meltdown basically yesterday when he was standing behind the bushes and didn't want to talk to the press and made them turn the lights out and gave a press conference in a darkened driveway. I mean, there is a degree to which the administration is not on top of this story. And what has to happen for us in our democracy is that people put enough pressure on their elected members of Congress to do something about it. And that is beginning to happen. First of all, Trump's approval rating has tanked, and it may sink quite a bit further. We don't know yet after this week. There are a lot of town hall meetings going on around the country tomorrow, Friday, in Republican districts where they were originally organized by people who were very concerned about the repeal of the Affordable Care Act and the devastating effect that the House bill, and we don't know yet what will come out of the Senate, could have on millions of people who will lose their health care. And so there are a lot of angry constituents who want to meet with their Republican representatives, and those representatives have been avoiding them. So we have progressive members like Mark Pocan from here in Madison, Wisconsin. He is going to the district where he grew up, which is Paul Ryan's district, to attend the town hall that Paul Ryan refuses to hold tomorrow and talk to those constituents. And they have added to the agenda not just how people really feel about their health care, which is that they don't like the repeal, but also the firing of Comey and this, you know, constitutional crisis and what Republicans need to do to get a backbone and do something about it.
So when does allegiance to Donald Trump become a liability for people like Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, many others?
I think that it could happen in the next week or two.
Really?
I think that Trump's approval rating, which is hovering in the mid-30s, could dip down below 30%. And I think at that point, a lot of Republicans are going to be looking at 2018, and they are going to be really, really worried. And in addition to that, I will say that it is... In the next issue of the Progressive Magazine, we are going to do a whole analysis of grounds for impeachment and the impeachment process and what that looks like. And there needs to be adequate political support for impeachment to happen. And that takes a lot of public pressure, and it takes people elected in districts across the country who will support impeachment. And that could happen in this next election cycle. So that's where people need to not just say, oh, it's Trump, who cares, it's all crazy, and really focus in the same way that they did in 1973, which resulted in first the impeachment and then the resignation of Richard Nixon.
Are you ready, Ruth, to support impeachment?
I think that there is a good case to be made, and I think that that case is going to get stronger. But I think also what's important to remember, and John Nichols, who I was mentioning earlier, wrote a whole book about impeachment, is that impeachment is political. It is not a technical legal issue. It requires a lot of political will. There is an impeachment case to be made against somebody who is besmirching his office and violating the public trust, and that case can be made against Donald Trump.
Michael, thanks very much for your call. More phone calls in a moment. Ruth Conniff is our guest. We're talking about the aftermath of the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Okay, phone calls now. Mike in Madison is next. Hello, Mike.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
Ruth, got a question for you. A lot of Republican senators, congressmen, say that the investigations will continue to go on, and that's all good. But if you've got an attorney general and a deputy attorney general who aren't willing to push forward a case, then all of these investigators, these FBI guys, are just spinning on their gerbil wheels, producing work or evidence that's not going to go anywhere. Is there any other route for that evidence to go? For instance, if they came up with something against General Flynn, in order to force him to turn state's evidence, they would need to have some viable prosecutable, you know, force against him. But if he knows he's insulated because of the attorney general and deputy attorney general, he's not going to have to ever turn state's evidence.
Well, right. So there's a couple different questions here. But the first thing I think to keep in mind is that all of these people are operating in a political environment in which public confidence is plummeting. And that's going to change people's political decisions. So to the degree that there's immense public pressure on members of Congress and people inside the Justice Department, particularly Rod Rosenstein, to appoint a special prosecutor who is truly independent and to press forward with this investigation, that makes a big difference. The other issue is that the stunned and horrified career FBI agents mm-hmm. who are grappling, you know, what do they do now that they're leaderless? I mean, I think we are definitely looking at the potential for a deep throat, you know, to come out and release information that is so damaging that Republicans have no choice but to abandon Donald Trump.
I was wondering about Comey. I know he's been invited to the Senate Intelligence Committee to testify behind closed doors. Should he? Will he?
I think he should, and I don't see why he wouldn't.
All right. Mike, thanks for your call. Mary in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. Well, I would just like to say that Donald Trump is the world's biggest con artist, and I think he's finally gotten himself caught in a con game that he's not going to win. He has stepped into a pit of quicksand, and I think the more he fails and tries to get himself out, the deeper he's going to get in.
I think that's very possibly the case. I think that's right.
Thanks, Mary, for your call. Gary and Merrill. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
With Mr. Comey, he certainly looked the part of an FBI director, but he was, I guess, a kind of a loose cannon. That's what the Democrats thought before the election, and they felt betrayed, and they wanted him to get out. And now, after the election, now they've seem to change their tune. But, you know, if Hillary would have been elected, I would have hoped the best for the country. But that just doesn't seem to be the case with the Democrats. I guess with Hillary, we would have had communism. With Trump, we were going to have new trade deals. We won't have a half a trillion dollar a year trade deficit. The dollar is strong. If he brings back some of the overseas money, it'll be good for everybody, including the people that supposedly the Democrats care so much about. Why all the hate?
All right, I don't think Hillary is a communist, but Gary, aren't you concerned about a possible collusion between the people surrounding Donald Trump and the Russians to influence our elections? Doesn't that concern you? Don't you think that should be investigated?
Yeah, I do, but there must be 1,000 people since the first of the year that's been trying to find anything they can, a smoking gun there, and so far I haven't heard of anything.
Well, they got Michael Flynn. Ruth.
Yeah, I mean, I think somehow we have to emerge from these partisan stances, mm-hmm. and we have to decide whether we care about having an imperial president who's above the law, whether we care about a foreign government meddling in our election. You know, I mean, you can support the policy positions of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton and still care about corruption and, you know, the violation of the basic duties of office. And I think that's where we need to get to in this country.
Oh, we're so far from there, aren't we? Why?
I don't know. I don't know that we are. I mean, I think that you're seeing a lot of people who went along for a ride with Donald Trump who are kind of thinking, I don't know. I mean, I think one of the things that the color reflects is a sense in the public that contributed to Trump's election that the political establishment doesn't care about them and doesn't represent them. And particularly, you know, he mentioned trade deals. I think that there is a sense in the industrial Midwest where people have seen global trade deals that benefited large corporations, that had bipartisan support, that had a devastating impact on their communities, and that, frankly, the Democratic Party hasn't had enough to say, supported those deals along with the Republicans, and hasn't had enough to say about what to do for people. So you get Donald Trump, who presses on that anger and throws a big rock at the establishment in Washington. But, you know, he's not really delivering. He is no longer talking about ending NAFTA. He's going to renegotiate NAFTA. There's a lot of talk about this wall on the border. Even though there's less migration to the United States from Mexico, it's actually negative now. There's more Mexicans going back to Mexico than there are coming in. So I think it's a focus of a genuine, legitimate anger in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And you've got Trump bringing in the same mergers and acquisitions billionaires who helped structure an economy that hurts people in the 1980s, bringing them into his administration to, you know, support eliminating the minimum wage and, you know, doing all kind, rolling back worker health and safety regulations. And, you know, in the end, I think we're not going to see him deliver for the people he appealed to in order to get elected. So that's the political piece.
Where are the infrastructure jobs?
Right. You know, I mean, I think what we're seeing instead is more of the same. There's a lot of rhetoric and there's a lot of anger. And that's gratifying, I think, for people who feel angry and anxious. Right. But, you know, you have a whole lot of Wall Street-friendly millionaires and billionaires running this administration, very much to the satisfaction of corporate America. So, you know, you're not going to see Janesville benefit. And I know you're going to talk about that in the next hour.
Mm. Gail, we're almost out of time from Fish Creek, but go ahead quickly.
Okay. My concern is of Henry Kissinger showing up because he was around.
That was weird, too.
The whole time of Nixon and the gold standard and all these Wall Street people. I'm concerned about money. And one other thing, when the movie comes out, I think Nathan Urban, the Australian actor, would be a really perfect James Comey.
All right. Thanks very much, Gail, for the call. That was weird, too. Henry Kissinger, of all people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are living through a very surreal moment in American politics, and I hope that we get some clarity out of it.
I hope so, too, Ruth. Well, that's why you're around. That's why we have you on the radio. That's why we're around, you know. That's what we're supposed to do. Thanks, Ruth, very much, although it's exhausting to keep up with everything, I must say. Ruth Conniff, our guest for this part of the program, she is editor of The Progressive. We also thank Ethan Theo Harris, who has been an FBI scholar for a number of years, is considered the foremost FBI scholar and has written many, many books about the FBI and McCarthyism and number of other issues related to the FBI. So it was a good hour. Thanks, everybody, for your many, many calls. Thanks so much to Gretchen Brown for producing the program and for doing on-air production here in Milwaukee as well. We have news coming up from National Public Radio. We will return and talk with two of the people who are featured in the book Janesville, An American Story. It's an important story of what's happened to people in Janesville since the Great Recession of 2008. Have they been able to bounce back? We'll ask two of the people featured that question.